When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome along to this edition of Football Digest Extra Time with myself, Ned Keating. I'm joined today by my good friend Connor Bromley as we look back on a pretty disastrous night for English clubs in the Champions League, but look ahead more optimistically, knowing that English clubs will of course triumph in the FA Cup this season, with the semi-finals to come this weekend. We've got Manchester City up against Chelsea on Saturday, Coventry, the surprise package in this year's FA Cup, up against Man United on Sunday. But first, as I mentioned there, Connor, we are going to look back at the Champions League exits for Manchester City and Arsenal on Wednesday night. We're going to start with Arsenal first, going further away from home first, because Arsenal were away to Bayern Munich in the second leg of their quarterfinal. It was 2-2 at kickoff in Munich, but by the end of the game, Bayern Munich had secured a 3-2 aggregate success, winning 1-0 on the night. Joshua Kimmich's second half header proving the difference for Bayern Munich. And Connor, I suppose for Arsenal, it will be a feeling of what if in this quarter final. In that first leg, they weren't at their best. In Munich, they weren't at their best. They weren't the Arsenal that we've become accustomed to under Mikel Arteta. And it'll be that kind of disappointment that might linger with them, knowing that they could have performed better in both legs and feeling that maybe could have got them through to the semi-finals. And now there really is that feeling of what if for Arsenal.
Yeah, I think Arsenal will reflect maybe on the last week, sort of 10 days a week, and wonder if, you know, what they could have done differently. I think a lot of the fans will be questioning the mentality of the team. I think there's been so many question marks around Arsenal and the fact that at the business end of a season, the last, we can't say three seasons yet because this season obviously isn't over yet, but the two seasons prior to this, we know that they've come unstuck, you know, when the pressure's reached a high level. And I think we're seeing that on now, you know what I mean? Is the season in danger of unraveling? I would say that we are seeing the beginnings of an unraveling right now. I think you can see that if it was a ribbon, it's getting loose. The strings are being pulled. And I think it's a real concern that clearly the mentality within this Arsenal group, that's the only thing it can be. We know they're a super talented team. You know, Thomas Tuchel said last night that Arsenal were an elite team. And it's, you can't disagree with that. They are an elite team. I think they're a fantastic team to watch. However, when the clock seems to turn, or the calendar seems to turn, sorry, to April, this team, you know, just seems to stumble over its lines. It trips over itself. And that's a real concern, because I think now that's a narrative, isn't it, around this Arsenal team. It's something that they're going to have to beat. It's their sort of boogeyman, isn't it? You know, they're a brilliant team, but when the going gets tough, can you trust that mentally they can deal with the pressure? And I think it's fair to say the evidence we've seen since Mikel Arteta has been in charge is that they actually do struggle with that. Now, I suppose you can, you know, caveat that with there are teams still in development. I think if you'd said to an Arsenal fan 3 years ago they were in this position, they would have bit your hands off. I think they'd be happy with stumbling towards the end of a season when they were finishing eighth in the Premier League. You know, I think Arsenal fans have to put it in that perspective. But there is a point where how long can you allow this track record to go on, and how do you break out of it? Because this group of players, you know, we're talking on the Monday show, for example, about the fact that, you know, Man City have the experience, you know, Liverpool have a bit more experience at this time of a season. But this is now going to potentially the third time that this has happened. So are these players going to learn from that experience? You know, how long do you say that, you know, a Martin Odegaard, a Bukayo Saka, these players that have been there for, yeah, Gabriel, who've been there for so long, how long can you say that, you know, they need to gain the experience? Because they're gaining the experience right now. Right now, they're gaining bad experiences because they seem to be chucking away these games when they shouldn't. But I think overall, the overriding theme for this Arsenal team, for me, should be look at where we were, look at where we are. Yes, it's disappointing right now, but this team, I still think, is on the up, even though, you know, the things I've just said before about mentality and whatnot need to be addressed. This team overall is in a, it's trending in a positive direction still.
Full disclosure here, I am a Tottenham fan. Regular listeners will be aware of that. So, of course, me commenting on Arsenal might seem a bit interesting, and they're, you know, experts in Europe. But it's interesting there that you point out about the fact that, you know, this team has, you know, it gets to April and their season falls apart. And it, you know, that was what we used to say of Arsenal previously, wasn't it? You know, and in those years, you know, you kind of think back to, you know, the kind of turn of the last decade, so around kind of 2010, there were so many times that they were challenging for, you know, going into the Champions League quarterfinals, challenging for the Premier League, and then it would get to April and it would all fall apart. And now we're seeing that again with that side as well. And as you say there, you know, kind of maybe it is the experience, the need for more experience within that side. And, you know, they'll be upset, but now it kind of, you know, kind of one season you accept, two seasons on the spin that it happens, you kind of start to see a bad habit forming and you kind of worry for them. For Arsenal now, does this put more pressure on them? And of course it puts more pressure on them in the Premier League. There is no doubt about that, because the fact is, Connor, you know, you said there that, you know, Arsenal fans 2-3 years ago would have taken getting to a Champions League quarterfinal, such as where they were when they were finishing outside of the European places, even in the Premier League as well, finishing quite low down the table. But the fact is, go back to that, you know, go back to the summer, expectations were high after how they did last year. They would have expected a trophy, some form of trophy, be it FA Cup, Champions League, Premier League. They've now got one shot at glory. That puts a hell of a lot of pressure back on that side now, doesn't it, to achieve something this year, because Arsenal fans want that. I mean, look, the journey is all about, you know, sometimes it is all about the journey, is what I mean to say there. But we could get to a point at the end of the campaign where my beloved Tottenham and Arsenal have both achieved the same thing this season. No trophies, Champions League qualification. Now, look, the routes and the journeys are very much different, but when you look at it on paper like that, you know, who's to say that Arsenal have had a better season than Tottenham in terms of that respect? Yes, you know, they finished second, got in the Champions League quarterfinals, but when you drill it all back to what they achieved, and that's my point here. This is going to put a lot more pressure on Arsenal to have to succeed in the Premier League title race to make this season a success for me.
I think as well, you know, you talk about the comparisons with Tottenham. I think if you look at the Pochettino era at Tottenham, you know, fantastic era for the football club. They got a Champions League final, competing at the top end of the Premier League, which in my lifetime they'd never ever done before. And ultimately, we reflect now on the Pochettino era. And I think my feeling, and probably your feeling as well, certainly as a Tottenham fan, is it was a missed opportunity. Tottenham should have won things in that era. They were, I would say, at one point, certainly the second best team, possibly even the best team in the Premier League. That, yeah, Leicester won the league. You know, Tottenham really should have won the Premier League that season, in all honesty. You know, they were, in my opinion, probably the best team in the league. Obviously, Leicester went on a you know, fairy tale run and won the title, and we can't take that away from them. But fundamentally, there was a period there for, you know, 3 or 4 years where Tottenham were truly one of the best teams in the Premier League, and they have nothing to show for it beyond, you know, a Champions League final defeat. And yes, you know, the fantastic memories, getting to the Champions League final, the games against Ajax, the games against Man City. I'm sure as a Tottenham fan, you know, their moments mean so much. But fundamentally, you look at the what they had in the end, and there's nothing to show for that era. Mikel Arteta does have an FA Cup to his name. Obviously, he won that in his sort of first season there. But I think you look at it since then, and I don't think they have necessarily taken the cup competitions as seriously, certainly the domestic ones, as maybe they should have. And fundamentally, you are gauged on what you do in trophies, and the Champions League obviously was going to be difficult for them to win it this year. You know, I don't think they were necessarily favourites to do that. You look at the FA Cup though, they went out against Liverpool, the Carabao Cup, can't remember who they went out against, to be honest. But then you look at the Premier League, and that was the one that were targeting. They've been targeting the Premier League for the last 2 years, and they're coming up short. And fundamentally, I want to see this Arsenal team pick up trophies, because I think as well, it's mentality, isn't it? How many times we've seen a Pep Guardiola, Jose Mourinho win the Carabao Cup, and it sort of sets them up. It gives them that little bit of momentum for the season. It takes a bit of a burden off, all right, we've got a trophy in the bag. I want to see Arsenal, you know, certainly next season, try and win some trophy, you know, try and win the Carabao Cup, try and win the FA Cup, because otherwise you're in danger of this narrative about them being bottlers and bottle jobs, you know, spiral out of control. And this time next season, if they're 3 points clear at the top of the Premier League with 8 games left, we all know what the questions for Mikel Arteta are going to be. You know, have you got the mentality to do this? Last season, you were in this position, you didn't win the league. And he has to answer that, you know, and I think they're fair questions, and that team has to answer that question next season.
Yeah, trophies definitely kind of breed confidence, and you kind of get a hunger for it as well. One team who hasn't missed out on trophies much in recent years, and of course won the treble last season, but they will be missing out on the Champions League this year, is Manchester City. They were losing on penalties to Real Madrid on Wednesday night, Connor. And, you know, the talk around the game, perhaps, you know, coming into the match, that there was this could be the toughest game that Manchester City face in their bid to win a second consecutive treble. Everyone had handed the Premier League title to Manchester City after the defeat to Liverpool and Arsenal in the Premier League last week. You know, even though there's only 2 points and there's still six games to go, there's still a long way to go in that title race. But there was this expectation that this game against Real Madrid was going to be the kind of toughest test that they faced to stop them winning the treble. And lo and behold, it has proved that way. They aren't going to be winning the treble for a second consecutive year. For Man City, is that, you know, they'll be disappointed and they'll be upset. Is there maybe, you know, I can't even say there's any positive in there, really. I was going to say it allows them to focus on other things. But, you know, they would have wanted to defend their Champions League title. The sign of a good team, especially amongst European, you know, competitors, is to go out there and you know, kind of defend the title as well, defend that Champions League, prove that you're still the best in Europe. And unfortunately, they weren't able to do that and came up short against Real Madrid.
I think City right now will be really, really disappointed because overall, they were the better team over the two legs. They should have won the game. That they lacked a clinical edge last night, it's fair to say. I think it's crazy to say that there is question marks, but there is question marks about Erling Haaland in big games of, you know, for Man City. And those question marks, I think, will rear their head again because, you know, he didn't score last night in a tight game where you're wanting your big stars to show up and you're wanting your star centre forward to get a big moment. You know, he hasn't. And I think that's a bit of a running theme for him, you know, how good is he in the massive games for Manchester City? And I think that's a question that will be continued to be brought up. In terms of how does this affect Man City, I would suspect that the train will just sort of chug along. They do obviously have the benefit of playing two less, you know, games between now and the end of the season because they'll not be playing a Champions League semi-final. So I suppose that is a minor positive. And I think they'll be glad that they're going into an FA Cup game this weekend as well. You know, they're not going into a Premier League match. And I think that might be good for them as well because it means that, you know, it's not straight back to the grind of the Premier League. You know, they've got a different focus there. But I think overall, you know, I'd be interested to hear your opinion on this. But I think overall, Real Madrid, it was almost the aura of Real Madrid that won them that game. Last night, I saw Ancelotti say that when it went to penalties, they knew that they'd win. That's kind of just Real Madrid in a nutshell, isn't it? They just have this knack of finding a way of getting rid, almost because of their name power. You know, they just find a way that to win a game of football when they really did not deserve to win that game last night.
I would disagree with you on that respect in terms of, you know, they didn't set up to win the game, but they set up to win the tie. And I think they kind of backed themselves to be able to get the job done on penalties or at least, you know, nick the goal. And they did that. They got the first goal and the kind of that game plan was going to it. And I think it speaks a lot about the belief within the team. They have such phenomenal players going forward that they were all happy, though, to kind of do the defensive legwork instead. And they kind of knew that that was their best way. And I think, you know, they kind of accepted it that, you know, you're not going to play sexy football every game to win every trophy. Sometimes you have to do the grunt work, the harder stuff, you know, the non-glamorous side. And that's what they did, I think, really well against Manchester City, you know. And Pep Guardiola himself in his post-match press conference was saying, you know, defensively they were so solid, so congratulations to them for that. And I think they have to be applauded for that. Yes, for the neutrals, you know, they just sat back and you know, kind of when Pete Mourinho parked the bus at the Etihad and kind of, you know, told Man City to come and break them down. And that was the issue. Man City couldn't break them down. They couldn't find the passes. You know, Real Madrid held their defensive line by and large really well. I know there was, you know, they were quite sloppy in possession, I think, at times as well, Real Madrid, and they did invite a lot of pressure onto them. But that pressure never really told, you know, in the main. You know, yes, Man City got a goal. And yes, they had chances, but they only scored once. Of all the possession and everything else, Manchester City only scored once. And Andre Lunin's a good goalkeeper. He's not a great goalkeeper, but even then, he wasn't really overworked at many points. It wasn't a fantastic goalkeeper performance that kept him in it. It was the defensive shape of Real Madrid, that impressed me. And yeah, you know, one team did try and win it. That's granted. But I think it speaks a lot about this team, this cohesion that Real Madrid have, that they're like, no, grand, we'll play defensively because we know that that's our best way of getting through, best way of trying to win this competition. And we've got, you know, fantastic attacking players like Rodrigo, like Vinicius Jr., like Jude Bellingham as well. Phenomenal attacking players, but they're like, no, we are going to do our fair shift defending today. And we're going to try and get that one goal. Unfortunately, that didn't prove, but they still came through on penalties. So I think full credit to Real Madrid and a fantastic game plan. And Carlo Ancelotti again proved himself to be one of the best operators in European football.
What do you make of, okay, switch rules here. What do you make of the Bernardo Silva penalty? Because that was the chatter last night, wasn't it? You know, it was one of the worst penalties you've ever seen. To me, the goalkeeper has just played a blinder, because if that goes in, he's just hit it down the middle. Nobody says boo to a goose. Everyone goes, oh, good penalty. Calm, composed, the guts to put it down the middle when the keeper stood there. And it's not often you see a keeper just sort of stand there and catch the ball. But I think Bernardo Silva is very unlucky that he has been labelled as taking one of the worst penalties ever. It's not like that. It was a Girona one the other day where it was like the last minute of the game. That was a terrible penalty. Whereas this one, he's just very unfortunate about the way that the keeper sort of reacted to it.
Yeah, the narrative is that keepers are always told where you've got to dive somewhere. You know, the goalkeepers are criticised normally when penalties are taking place. Goalkeepers are criticised if they stay in the middle because, you know, the expectation is they'll go one way or the other. So, of course, then, by that law, you would think, well, if goalkeepers are told to dive, then, you know, going down the middle should be the safest option. The thing that I think is held against Bernardo is it was tame, no power, and a really, really comfortable height. You know, I mean, look, anything straight down the middle, when a goalkeeper stands straight, anything towards him, he's saving it, grand. You know, it doesn't matter if it's his feet or his head, he's saving it. But it's just the placing of it, you know, it's mid-height. I mean, any penalty mid-height is always labelled a bad one, and that was quite bad because it's quite comfortable for the keeper to save. But again, anything that goes straight down the middle was really, really simple for the goalkeeper to save. But yeah, you're right in that respect, you know. 9 times out of 10, a goalkeeper, you know, not even 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, 999 times out of 1,000, you know, a goalkeeper is probably diving, you know, for penalties because they're told to do that in training. You know, you have to dive one way or the other. The expectation is they're going to go for the corners. That's what goalkeepers are told. Bernardo probably had that in his head. A little bit unfortunate. I understand your point, but it's just how it looks, isn't it? You know, doesn't look great when it is chest height straight at the goalkeeper. And ultimately, you know, again, if Manchester City had won, no one would be talking about it either. And you look at all the other penalties, and the goalkeepers dived every other single time as well. When you look at, you know, if there was in a shootout, you know, someone has to go down the middle at some point. You know, you kind of flash back to maybe Andrea Pirlo, and everyone was waxing lyrical about the Panenka that he did against England in the shootout in Euro 2012. And again, had Joe Hart in that instance decided that he was going to, you know, play the odds and stand straight and stand tall, we wouldn't be talking about Andrea Pirlo. And I think maybe, you know, the love that he got as a player, fantastic player, but, you know, stemmed from that, oh, look how cool and calm he is. Instead, we'll be telling him that he's an idiot for going for Panenka in such a high pressure situation. So I do understand your point there as well, that, you know, kind of ordinarily a keeper dives and Bernardo scores, and, you know, we're not really talking about this. One thing we should be talking about, though, Connor, is the, we'll come on to the impact that it has on the coefficient, what it might mean for the Premier League and fifth place. But what it also means, last night's results, is we now know the teams that will be going off to represent UEFA at next year's, well, it's been labelled Mundial de Clubs, so it means that I can use my Spanish GCSE to good effect to pronounce it there. But we now know the European teams that will be going off to represent UEFA at the 2025 Club World Cup, the remodeled, rebranded Club World Cup in the United States. So in terms of winners, both Chelsea and Manchester City are going forward. Real Madrid have also qualified as winners as well. This year's winners are already, the four semi-finalists are already qualified as well, which is the reason why it's not holding out hope. Arsenal were the last side that maybe could have got themselves into it by winning it, but everyone else had already secured their place through what is known as UEFA's four-year ranking. Now, there are no extra places for English teams because we already have a maximum of two teams in it already through winning it. We could have had a third team in there, but because we've already got two, it means that there's no English clubs that can get in there through the rankings, and that applies to the other nations as well. The reason why I'm explaining this is because we have a slightly rogue team that we're going to come on to last. Okay, so stick with us. So as I said there, Chelsea and Manchester City as two winners, along with Real Madrid as a third winner. In terms of four-year rankings, Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund from Germany, so that's their two. Inter Milan and Juventus from Italy, that's their two. Atletico Madrid are also getting in by the four-year ranking system, which places them with Real Madrid as Spain's two. So what this means is that they slowly kind of work their way down the list, and other countries then start getting invited or getting looked at. So they kind of work their way down the coefficient list. It's kind of similar to how, if anyone's au fait with how qualification for golf works at the Olympics as well, is that they'll work their way down the rankings. But once a maximum of two from a country is hit, then they'll kind of jump that person and they'll go to the next one and so on and so forth. Which means that we have two Portuguese sides in it as well. We have Porto and Benfica. Paris Saint-Germain are also in there representing France. But the outstanding team, and if anyone has seen their social media post about it as well, fair play to them. They deserve to be getting in for it alone for using a clip from Borat to announce their arrival in the Mundial de Clubs 2025. It is, of course, European heavyweight Red Bull Salzburg of Austria. So congratulations to them, and we're all looking forward to them being, you know, again with that meme, we are looking forward to them being the proverbial polar bear in Arlington, Texas, when they take on any match at Cowboys Stadium. They will miss a trick if they do not schedule a game there for them. But of course, the other issue kind of is the coefficient for the Premier League sides as well. It now looks like hopes of fifth place. You know, we're recording this Thursday morning. It could be that, you know, Liverpool record a fantastic, you know, success in, you know, the Europa League and progress past Atalanta. I doubt it. But it looks like it's going to be a bit of a struggle now for an English club to get fifth place and the impact on it as well. But speaking from a Tottenham point of view, and as I continue this lovely monologue where I've gone on for about 5 minutes now, but speaking as a Tottenham fan, I'm not too upset that the fifth place thing might be taken away, because quite frankly, you know, that is getting into Europe by the back door. And yes, I am aware that Liverpool are a prime example of what I'm about to say next. But if you finish fifth in the Premier League, you're clearly not good enough for the Champions League. Yes, I know Liverpool won it in 2005 when they finished fifth, moved past that with 20 years down the line almost. But that's it, isn't it? It is getting into Europe by the back door. And if you're not good enough for the top four in a season where Chelsea have had another off campaign, where Man United have been poor, where Newcastle are only coming good at the latter stages. And yes, again, please do not mention that 4-0 defeat at the weekend. But that's it, isn't it? It is getting into the back door. And it's kind of, in a way, you know, yes, you want more English clubs to get in. And yes, you know, your people might be listening and going, why do you not want your club in the Champions League? But it would be like getting into Europe by the back door.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Champions League in it. So you shouldn't be finishing fifth and qualifying. I mean, there's an argument, really, that finishing fourth and getting in seems a bit dumb. You know, if you think the name of the competition is meant to be the Champions, and that's the music, and that's the intro when you turn it on TNT, it's the Champions. And fifth place, it does feel a little bit rogue in a sense to have fifth place get in. But, you know, that's the way the competition's going. I think from a Tottenham perspective, they can still get in via the league as well. So maybe it's just extra motivation for them to, you know, plow on and try and, you know, get in there, not do what they did last weekend, which was embarrass themselves again at St. James's Park. I just want to talk a little bit about the Club World Cup, which I think is how it will be known here. It seems like a bit of a glorified preseason tournament to me. You know, I don't see how a Pep Guardiola, who, you know, will have players at the Euros this summer, he'll have players at, you know, countless other international competitions, international breaks. The season finishes, Champions League final probably, you know, start of June next year, end of May, and then to go, I think it's the 13th of June, something like that, the Club World Cup starts. You know, that's a no break for them players and their squads. And I just wonder if that has a massive impact on this competition, because I don't see Man City taking their star players. And I think the other factor is it's going to fall mid-season for some clubs as well. You know, the North American teams and South American teams, it'll fall in their sort of season. So it's going to be weird for them as well. I just don't think it's a good idea. I think that this is something that is FIFA are hoping it's a money spinner. And I think it might be a money spinner because it's in the US and North America, but I don't see it working long term. I don't think teams will want or care about this competition. I'm not looking forward to it. You know, that's as far as I can say. I just don't think it's going to work.
But this is why we are all Red Bull Salzburg. Imagine saying that they are the first club world champion. Well, not the first, of course. We've had a club world cup of different iterations. And it was the one in 2000, wasn't there, that took place mid-season when Man United had to skip the FA Cup, didn't they, that year as well, and the furore that caused. But yes, we are all Red Bull Salzburg, and we would all love it if they were crowned the first club world cup champions of this new form of competition as well. Can be honest, the Mundial de Clubs. Again, I hope my Spanish teacher is listening, and I hope I'm making her proud, or she might be pulling her hair out as well as I'm butchering her beloved language. Anyway, enough about the Club World Cup, enough about the Champions League. We are going to talk about the FA Cup because we do have games to come in that this weekend. There is the Premier League. Arsenal are in action against Wolves on Saturday. Liverpool are also in action on Sunday. One of them, you would expect, will jump above Manchester City in the Premier League standings. But again, of course, Man City will then have a game in hand because they are playing Chelsea at the weekend. Now, Connor, the question here for Manchester City is, can they recover both mentally and physically from losing on penalties after 120 minutes of football against Real Madrid on Wednesday night? That's a tight turnaround, isn't it? To go Wednesday, 120 minutes, back in action, FA Cup, to travel down to London as well. I think they're travelling down Fridays, what Pep Guardiola was saying. But can they recover mentally and physically? And which one's more important, probably, for them to recover from first?
Well, I think it is a bit of a disastrous situation because Man City are the Saturday game as well, aren't they? So, you know, that's, you'd think in a way the FA would have, you know, done them a solid and put them on the Sunday. It didn't seem to make any sense that you would have Man City playing Champions League on Wednesday night and then playing on a Saturday, but that's a different argument altogether. I think these, you know, Pep Guardiola teams are mentality monsters. I know that's a Jurgen Klopp line, but they are, you know, and I think they will be able to recover mentally and physically. We've seen it, you know, we've seen Man City do this often. How often do Man City lose back-to-back games? You know, I think you can probably count on one hand under Pep Guardiola when that's happened, if it's happened at all. You know, that's not something that they do. So they are good at bouncing back from adversity. So I think that we will not see a Champions League hangover from Manchester City. Now, that isn't to say that Chelsea don't have a chance this weekend, because I think Chelsea will be feeling in a pretty confident mood after the game against Everton on Monday night. I think Chelsea will feel good in this game that they've got. Honestly, they've got a big chance, but I think they've got a decent chance. Cole Palmer, you know, that you've got that factor as well. He's in red-hot form. Even though he's got the cool celebration with this going on, which I'm not a big fan of, but I don't know. I think that this is an interesting game because of the factors of this past week. You know, I think Man City will have to come out strong. You know, the last thing they want to do is just come out flat against a Chelsea team that will be sort of sensing blood. And I think from Chelsea's perspective, they have the lessons that hopefully they've learned from when they played Liverpool in the Carabao Cup. You know, you got to be clinical. You got to take your chances because Conor Gallagher is still probably thinking about all their misses he had in that Carabao Cup final. So I think that sets up a very interesting game this weekend. I think of both semi-finals are going to be really, really interesting. But I think City against Chelsea, you know, I think there could be fireworks there.
Just on Chelsea, if it does go to penalties again for Manchester City this week, Chelsea at least will know that they have three willing penalty takers in Cole Palmer, Nonny Manueke and Nicholas Jackson after that debacle on Monday night. And yes, I joke and I make a laugh about it there, but it's a serious matter for Mauricio Pochettino to consider going into this game, isn't it? How does he, you know, he said after the game that, you know, he would take action. That's the last time that that's going to happen, were his words, and you know, hinted that he would take action. I suppose action is dropping definitely Nicholas Jackson, potentially Nonny Madueke as well. He, you know, maybe was getting a bit of a bad rap from it. He saw Cole Palmer down, thought he was injured, and tried to take the penalty instead for him. But does he look at, you know, dropping the pair? Cole Palmer's fine in this, you know. Cole Palmer knows that he's starting, he's done nothing wrong, he's the natural penalty taker. But is, you know, does Mauricio Pochettino have to lay down the law here and say, we're a team, no one's bigger than the team, you're both out of this starting 11 because of how you acted on Monday?
I think it really depends how the group reacted to it in the dressing room. I think that if Jackson and Madueke came in the dressing room and said, lads, sorry, you know, it was a mistake, it'll not happen again, and they repented their sins almost, and Pochettino has, you know, he said that he won't tolerate it again. So that to me suggests that he is sort of tolerating it now and saying, you know, it can't happen again. I don't think that if Mauricio Pochettino thinks Chelsea are better with these two players in the team, I think that them two players play. I think if Mauricio Pochettino thinks they're better with different players playing, then I think he'll make a decision. I don't think it'll have an impact. But as I say, it really depends on what happens in the dressing room. I mean, we don't know how players in there reacted and how the squad reacted and whatnot. And I think that's the important thing to consider in all of this. You know, we're not in there. Obviously, Pochettino will have his pre-match press conference, and I'll be interested to see if he mentions it. I know that he wasn't happy about being asked about it after the game on Monday night, but it'll be interesting to see if he's asked about it again. He probably will be, and he might address there and then, it's been sorted, you know, we fixed it. Or he might say, no, these players aren't being considered because, you know, they broke protocol. You know, I think he will probably explain that in his press conference tomorrow.
At risk of going full Dexy's Midnight Runners here, I feel like we might have to wrap things up quite quickly over the next 5 minutes or so to make sure that we reach the end of the episode and we've covered all the talking points. But of course, the other semi-final is Coventry up against Manchester United on the Sunday. And the interesting thing here is, of course, Coventry manager Mark Robins famously saved Sir Alex Ferguson in an FA Cup tie years and years ago at the start of Fergie's reign. Towards the start of Fergie's reign, scored a late winner in an FA Cup tie, kept Fergie in a job and arrested his history. And of course, now, well, he can almost play, you know, if he was the hero in that instance and situation, he can almost play the villain this weekend. Erik ten Hag, you know, up against it already at Manchester United. The defeat against Coventry City is probably, you know, the final nail in the coffin for him to, you know, in his time as Manchester United manager. The expectation is that they get to a final. Even then, that might not be enough. Even if they win it, he might still get replaced, but they definitely have to win this weekend, don't they? And I suppose then that puts it in a no-win situation for Manchester United, that, you know, even if they win, it's expected. It's the minimum that's required from them this weekend, which is never, you know, it's definitely an unenviable position to be going into a semi-final win.
Yeah, and it's not a nice game for them to play. You know, I watch, obviously, in the Championship, I've seen a lot of Coventry City, and I watch a lot of Manchester United, and Coventry are better when they do not have the ball. You know, they played Birmingham last weekend and got beat 3-0. That's because they had the ball. They're not a team that enjoys lots and lots of possession. And I think it's fair to say Manchester United are kind of better without the ball. They like to be a counter-attacking team. Now, the issue is Manchester United are better than Coventry. Therefore, they will have a lot of the ball, you would expect. And that kind of plays into Coventry's hands, doesn't it? And it kind of plays out of Manchester United's hands. You know, Man United are at their best when they are hitting teams on the counter-attack. You know, we've seen them pick up results against big teams because they are good at hitting teams in that way. And Coventry City are a team that likes to sit in and counter-attack themselves, and they don't love having the ball. You know, they're not a team that's going to be playing 30 passes. You know, they want to hit teams very direct on the counter-attack. Hadji Wright and Ellis Sims are just two sort of physical specimens up front, both quick, both powerful, both decent finishers. And I just think this tie, you know, it has banana skin written all over it. Obviously, the caveat to all this is Manchester United have world-class players, you know, Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford, Rasmus Højlund. You can look at their team and you know that all them players have moments of brilliance in them. We've seen Man United not play well recently and pick up results because of individual brilliance. And that is going to be the X factor for them. It's, can one of their players come up with a moment, conjure up this special moment to break through what I imagine is going to be a very stubborn Coventry defence. And I think it's going to be possibly more like a chess match. I think the City-Chelsea game is going to be maybe free flow and more goals. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a 3-2, you know, something like that. I think this one could be settled. You know, if Man United get an early goal, I struggle to see Coventry getting back into the game. But if Coventry can kind of dig their heels in it and keep the game level until the hour mark, I think as the game wears on, you'd kind of fancy them to win the, you know, or at least have a stronger chance of winning the game. And I think it's going to be fascinating. I think if you were asking me right now, in all honesty, who I think is going to win that game, I think I'd probably say Coventry. You know, I think they have a really, really good chance.
There we go. You heard it here first from me. I think it's going to be a Manchester derby. And I presume, you know, Connor's going to go for Manchester City to win for against Chelsea as well, such as their golfing quality, shall we say, I think at the minute between those two sides. But looks like a Manchester derby for me, but Connor believes that it could be a City, all-City affair between Manchester City and Coventry City come the FA Cup final. Connor, thank you as always for joining us today. Really appreciate your time as always. Of course, you can keep up to date with all the latest from European action, from the Premier League. Of course, we've got games in it this week, the FA Cup, and don't forget to check back on Monday as well when we have a new episode of Football Digest with John Cross and Andy Dunn looking back at the FA Cup semi-finals. But for now, it's goodbye.